Good afternoon, radio fans. You're listening to Ask the Vet on KDNK. It is 4:30. Remember, please, that this is a call-in show. And the number to call in is 963-2976. Today we have Dr. Maker with us.
Hello.
And he's welcome. And he's here to talk to us about wintertime and our horses and nutrition and how we go about preparing our horses or our mules or donkeys for the wintertime. Dr. Maker, do you have a horse?
I have a mule.
You have a mule. Okay, so tell us a little bit about your mule. What's your mule's name?
Lily. Lily's great. She's awesome to ride in the mountains. Packs whatever she wants to pack out of the mountains. I enjoy seeing our mountains on her saddle.
Tell me a little bit more about what else you do. What else you do with Lily?
There have been a few occasions where we volunteered some time to help the U.S. Forest Service clear some trails. I enjoy backpacking and riding out and finding remote lakes to get there a little easier and fish. Enjoy helping some hunters in the fall take their animals out of the woods. Lily and other mules are kind of like the first original all-terrain vehicle, except they just eat hay.
Well, I'm glad you mentioned that. That's a good segue into talking about winter is coming now. So what kinds of things are you doing, including nutrition, what kinds of things are you doing with Lily to prepare for winter?
Well, we started preparing for the usual upswing or uptick in respiratory diseases by vaccinating her. This past fall, I think we did that in September. Usually when horses get closer together to stay warm or get into barns for a larger part of the day, they get commingled, and we see a increase in the amount of respiratory, particularly the viral infections. Kind of like children, you put them all inside in a classroom and stress them a little bit, their immune systems with a cold, and they're more likely to get certain respiratory illnesses.
You mentioned that all inside. Does Lily come inside in the wintertime?
She actually doesn't, but we vaccinate her because she's exposed to a lot of horses that come by the clinic on a daily basis. Horses are very tolerant of the outside weather if they don't have certain special geriatric needs, and they're fed properly, and they're allowed to acclimate to their environment. She's lived here all of her life, initially west of Carbondale and now here, and has good teeth. Doesn't have any special medical needs yet in her late teens, but she does really quite well on just grass hay raised on Missouri Heights.
Boy, that made me think of a couple of questions, actually. When you said she was born and raised here, I'm sure there are a lot of people that moved to this valley from other locations. I mean, I think I'm pretty familiar with your background. You've lived on the East Coast, you lived in the Midwest, you lived in the South, and now you're here. So you probably know a lot about equine life in different parts of the United States. So when somebody comes here and they bring their horses or their mules here, what kinds of things would you tell them about this is what winter's going to be like for your horse and this is how it's different or maybe different?
The most notable thing, I think, we see even horses that come from slightly, not tremendously warmer areas is, the altitude adjustment. It needs to be taken into account with a horse's activity level. No real difference from that of us, where if we're taken from sea level, California, let's say, and brought here, and usually this time of year, more horses leave here, show horses leave here to go to lower elevation areas like California and Florida, particularly for the show circuits. And some people are moving here, maybe fewer in the winter, but when they bring their horses to this altitude, we suggest slight changes in their conditioning program and just tweaking a little bit their nutrition program to accommodate the extra needs, particularly if they move here in the winter.
Now, you mentioned altitude and you talked about nutritional needs. Talk a little bit about hay or grass and about grains. And would you recommend a different way of feeding a horse in the wintertime than in the summer? And tell us a little bit about the kind of hay that people should be considering using.
Well, you know, herbivores are animals that eat plants strictly and ferment those plants for energy, are limited by the amount they can eat by their body weight. Horses, cows, an adult animal can roughly eat approximately 2 to 2.5% of its body weight until it's full. It can't eat anymore. So the quality of the forage that they eat and the calories that can be obtained from that forage directly are linked to the ability for an animal to maintain its body weight in the winter. You know, there's a spectrum of philosophies in the West as to when to start feeding your animal hay. We're well past the time now where there's adequate nutrition in grass still standing in the pasture to provide for adequate nutrition. So hay that's processed in the summer is processed then obviously in part because that's when the nutrients are highest in that grass and can be preserved. Hay left in the field, as a plant matures and goes dormant, that fiber that in the summer is digestible turns into more undigestible fiber sources. So while horses and cows are out there still browsing on it, its calorie content is much less. So that ability for an animal to remain healthy and maintain a optimal body weight is directly related to its ability to consume enough of a digestible forage source this time of year.
So I think, well, first let me say, you are listening to Ask the Vet and KD&K, and this is a call-in show, so please don't hesitate to call in. It is now 4:37. The number here is 963-2976, and you're listening to Dr. Charles Maker. He's talking about winterizing your horse. Getting your horse ready for the winter. You mentioned the time of year that you actually cut the hay, I think. Probably didn't say cut, but I heard that as to avoid using feeding your horse hay in the winter that's been cut late. Is that what you're saying?
No, it really is just a statement about forage. Its nutritive value varies according to how it's put up and when it's put up, how much water it has, the soil it comes from. So, you know, horses should be fed hay this time of year. There isn't enough nutrients in the grass still out there, you know, which I guess ordinarily would be covered with more snow than we have. The common misconception this time of year is beyond the thoughts of what's still left in the pasture is that grain can optimally make up that calorie deficit. And actually, one of the benefits of feeding hay and digestible fiber is that the fermentation process that occurs with hay produces more heat than that which occurs with digestion of grains. That alone, keeping the horse healthier and warmer, also requires less water. And it allows a horse to be less prone to digestible upsets if it is on a primarily digestible forage diet as compared to a high starch or high grain diet. Certainly, there are situations with horses with special needs where certain grains do need to be fed because there aren't enough calories in good quality forage for them. But in general, the vast majority of horses can avoid colic and warmth issues if they're fed a highly digestible grass, mixed grass hay.
Well, that makes me think of staying warm, horses staying warm. So does it take more calories in the winter for a horse to, well, I guess I'm trying to think here. You'd think they're more active in the summer, so therefore they would burn off a lot of calories. But do they burn off a lot of calories trying to stay warm too? And so is there, do you feed them more in the winter for that reason? Or
sure.
Okay.
You know, you and I shiver to produce heat, and horses obtain some of their body heat from fermentation of digestion of that food. So, you know, you and I would consider room temperature or a thermoneutral temperature to be 68 or 66 or somewhere around there degrees.
Ooh, a horse, about 66.
A horse really is kind of what we call thermoneutral at 45 degrees. They've got hair. They have fermentation occurring. They don't require any more temperature, any more food for heat at 45 degrees than they do 65 or 70 degrees. But what ends up happening is for every 10 degrees the temperature drops below 45, a horse needs an additional percentage of fiber to digest just to keep warm. If we quantify that, a horse needs about an extra pound and a half to 2 pounds of hay for every 10 degrees the temperature drops below 45. Now, if it's 10 below and a horse can only consume a certain amount of hay a day, it follows to reason that you could have a situation, if a horse had special needs, that it couldn't consume enough calories to maintain its body weight at a certain temperature. And that's where we consider things like shelters and certain grains and blanketing and all these other winterizing methods, if you will.
So it sounds like when it starts to get particularly cold and they can't get enough calories to stay warm, you have to start to look at some other ways to keep them warm. And let's talk a little bit about that and what other situations horses might need those extra special conditions or tools, if you will.
I mean, the most notable one nowadays with the plethora of additional older horses seemingly in the U.S. horse population is the presence or difference that occurs with, you know, advanced dental disease in horses. Horses get one set of teeth, and if cared for properly, they'll last into their early 30s often. But when horses don't have the appropriate or ability to properly chew their hay to allow for proper digestion, horses can be limited in the amount of calories they can obtain from the food they're eating. Otherwise, also notable would be horses that have certain metabolic diseases that affect their cortisol levels and pituitary function. These horses kind of get into a calorie wasting state, if you will, and require a unique blend of calories from protein and certain carbohydrate sources to properly maintain their body weight optimally.
So do you recommend, or in what situations do you recommend, a blanket for a horse? And does a blanket, this is a two-part question, does a blanket
is this segment sponsored by the co-op? Or
of course. We love you, co-op.
Yeah.
The second part of that question is, does putting a blanket on a horse have a detrimental effect on its ability to naturally stay warm?
Well, back up from that question a little bit, then that question's somewhat contentious because everybody has opinions on whether a horse is healthier or unhealthier with a blanket on. Back up and think about the horse's hair coat. The thing that stimulates the horse's hair coat is not whether it's cold or warm out, but rather it's by photoperiod. You know, the days are getting shorter. The horse is being stimulated a little bit more and more until about December 22nd, when the days are shortest, to grow a winter coat. So, you know, horses that are kept in barns under a lot of extra light sometimes will develop poor winter hair coats, where those horses, because they're going to be shown sometimes seasonally in Arizona in warmer environments, aren't going to have the winter coat that they would develop if they were outside without a blanket, because they're under a lot of artificial light in the barn in the evenings and early in the mornings. So whether to blanket or not to blanket and whether a blanket is detrimental really depends on whether a horse has a special need that requires more calories than it can physically consume, because you can put a blanket on a horse and make the horse feel artificially warmer and require less energy to be consumed to stay warm. As soon as you say that, though, you know, the hair coat is really optimally efficient when it's lofted with air and traps a lot of air next to the body. And a blanket, if used inappropriately and allowed or applied to a horse where a horse can sweat, mats the hair and makes the insulating properties of the hair less effective. That also leads to certain bacterial and fungal skin diseases that we see more commonly in the fall and winter, early spring. So there is definitely a complicated algorithm as to whether or not your horse needs a blanket or not. And it really depends on a multitude of those factors.
So it sounds like a mule like Lily, who has been in this climate for a really long time and is used to being outside in the wintertime and goes through that sort of, I think of seasonal growth of hair, and would do quite well.
She
and
does.
Unless Lily was sick, or Lily starts to get old, or maybe they're compromised in how much calories they can take in because of teeth or whatever.
Right. She's done well. She goes into the winter, you know, in an optimal body condition, doesn't have any age-related issues yet, has mm-hmm. good teeth. Mm-hmm. We take care of those annually to every 15 months. She can still consume those 19 or 20 pounds of hay a day that she needs to maintain her body weight and produce enough heat to stay warm. In the extremely cold, we haven't had it yet this year, but in those years in the past where it had been 15, 20, 25 below zero sometimes at night, we have blanketed her and or provided a windbreak for her to get out of the elements, particularly when it's precipitating, icy. Just like you and I, we lose body heat much more rapidly when we are in windy and wet conditions than we do in purely dry, cold conditions.
As a reminder, you're listening to Ask the Vet. It's 4:48, and you're also listening to KDNK. And this is a call-in show, so please think of some question you can stump Dr. Maker with. It doesn't have to be about winterizing your horse. It can be anything about your horse. The number here is 963-2976. You might even want to call him about your cat. That might really stump him.
That would stump me. Although I have a cat.
You do have a cat.
Bun Bun. She gets good care.
Yeah.
That's my cat.
Does Bun Bun wear a blanket when she's outside?
I don't know that she goes outside too much.
Yeah.
She goes outside with Tristan, my son.
Yeah. Is she on a leash when she's outside, or does she?
She's pretty good. She just stays in the backyard.
Yeah. Yeah. Does she like the snow?
She's long-haired, so she doesn't really care for it too much.
I think we have a call, so I'm going to let the caller talk. One moment. Are you there, caller?
Hello? Yes.
Are you there? Go ahead. Yes. Welcome.
I have a question about protein tubs as a supplement for equine.
Right. You know, we generally speak more of protein tubs for cattle, you know, who are out on the range eating a little less potentially nutritious hay and in their latter stages of pregnancy. Protein tubs, generally speaking, for maintenance, horses don't require, a horse that's healthy without those specialties doesn't necessarily require those protein tubs. We've had a couple instances where the molasses sugar content of the tubs has been deleterious to teeth. More commonly, we've used the protein blocks that they kind of, they don't seem to get as, they don't seem to dwell on them as much, and or use like a ration balancer, like a pelleted ration balancer that's fed once a day, and that seems to fit the horse model a little better than the protein tub. Kind of the same token with salt. You know, horses sometimes do better given free salt than salt blocks or compressed concentrates. So,
yeah, just the loose salt. Now, what about the trace mineral versus just white salt?
Well, they're exactly that. They're two completely different products. One, the white salt's just sodium chloride, and an adult horse needs 1 to 2, 2.5 ounces of sodium chloride daily. If your horse isn't...
Oh, that much?
Yeah, but if you think about that on a 1,000-pound animal, that's not very much. And there is salt that's contained in their hay and other things that they eat. Horses, if you salt your food, you drink more water. And one of the things we suggest in the winter as it pertains to salt is making sure your horse gets enough salt, because, you know, when you're cold, you choose to drink less water, and horses are very similar. And water is very important for digestion of forages that your horse eats.
Mm-hmm. Now, what about the red blocks versus the white?
So the white, the
trace mineral, always a good thing or not necessarily?
I think it's always a good thing to combine with a white sodium chloride block, because, you know, sodium chloride has just that, only sodium chloride. But when we test many of the grass and alfalfa grass blended hays grown locally, particularly on flood irrigated and irrigated pastures, we kind of typically have a trace mineral deficiency or partial inadequacy in many of the hays grown locally. And giving horses and livestock a readily available source where they can self-manage, you know, go to the trace mineral block, the brown block, and adjust their intake according to their needs helps many things. It helps muscle function, immune function. It helps intestinal motility. It is a good idea to provide both.
Yeah, both at the same. That's just free choice both.
Correct.
Okay.
And they'll consume different amounts of each block depending on their needs.
So there's not a downside to supplementing them with, you know, the sweet feed, the you know, rolls, grains with a little bit of molasses.
Well, nutrition.
I've got two mares with two foals, and they're not weaned yet. And, supplementing them a bit,
right?
They probably could use a little extra.
Well, they certainly can, particularly if they're not weaned yet, because the energy to lactate, and they're probably weaning themselves at this point, but the energy to lactate can be 15% or more beyond what a horse needs for maintenance. The issue becomes one of what you feed a horse is what it produces, and the trace mineral content found in just a simple crimped oats or three-way, four-way sweet feed with molasses is definitely not optimal for an animal that is growing long bones, if you will. Healthy skeletal growth requires a much different trace mineral balance than is typically found in, you know, or derived from a mare that's fed grass, hay, and four-way feed. You know, growing animal like a 6-month-old foal at this point is going to require a protein concentration of 18% in its diet, and feeding a grass hay of 11.5% is going to compromise that foal for optimal growth and potentially predispose it to certain orthopedic diseases when it's a yearling, a long yearling.
So you should really kind of look for a grower ration.
Yeah, there are pre-made general guidelines, you know, the 200, 300, 400 that are out there from commercial feed mills that correspond to the age groups, you know, the weanling, the yearling, the long yearling, two-year-old, that are pretty accurate or are good places to start.
Get a little more specific about what I buy then, probably.
Yeah, it's good to know what they're eating.
Thank you. caller. We are
right,
actually just about
thank
out of time,
much.
But thank you very much for calling.
Mm-hmm,
for sure. Bye-bye.
Good questions.
Yeah, good questions. And it made me think about, we're almost done here, so I want to ask one more question. And it made me think about hydration and about water and how much water should a horse have. And I think even more so, how do you tell if your horse is well hydrated?
Well, skin turgor and pink moist mucous membranes would be one way, I guess, you'd tell if they're hydrated. You ought to be able to watch the stock tank and ensure that a horse is eating, drinking about 10 or 12 gallons a day. You know, they know that heated water enables or encourages horses to drink as much as 40% more per day. You know, animals in the cold drink less naturally, and forage fermentation requires water. So not drinking enough water, you know, puts digestion at a difficult point. So 10 to 12 gallons a day with a good water heater inspected regularly is a good idea. Thanks very much.
How about, do you want to summarize this for us or give us no time? Oh, I just got told I had
have to wait
time.
Next week.
So thank you very much, Dr. Maker, and thank you to everyone who's listening. You're listening to Ask the Vet on KDNK.